Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us in this endeavor or want other information about the program or Jim Andrews, please visit our website at www.thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, Box 230098, Portland, Oregon 97282-0098. Our email address is jimandrews@thefinalwordradio.com. Now, before Pastor Jim continues with his current Bible study, let me tell you about Zubio, the easy, personalized way to listen to The Final Word and other radio programs you love. Zubio gathers all of your favorite programs into a seamless grab-and-go mix and automatically downloads it to your computer or MP3 player. Just click the Zubio link on our website and give it a try. We think you'll like it a lot.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the Epistle of James. We've come to James chapter 3, verses 13 and following. In this particular passage, James, after speaking to us of the terrors of the tongue, tells us how to acknowledge wisdom and spot a fool. He says, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom, so-called, is not that which comes down from above. This professed wisdom is earthly, natural, and demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, a paraphrase, there will follow in its train disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom that's from above, that's from God, is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed, whose fruit is righteousness, is sown in peace by those who make peace." Way back in my college days, we had a president, now long deceased, a former military general and educator, by the name of W.B. Axtell. Dr. Axtell had the look and the bearing of a general, just perfect for Hollywood typecasters. During my senior year at West Virginia Tech, I was student body president, and in that role, I had more occasion than most faculty to conference with the president, whom many of the faculty frankly feared and hated. I haven't always been so insightful in dealing with people, but in this particular case, very early in my association with the president, I somehow got a critical read on an important aspect of his personality that the faculty kept missing. Dr. Axtell was very proud of his military heritage, and he was a man who didn't like to disappoint expectations. Somehow or other, I don't know how, I picked up on the fact that if he were asked for a decision, he liked to be decisive and make one quickly. Unfortunately, his quick decisions were his bad ones, however. As I say, somehow I figured out that if I could couch things in such a way that I gave Dr. Axtell time to mull things over and invited myself to return in a week for his decision, he nearly always made a better, more thought-out decision. After a while, the faculty saw that I had a way with Dr. Axtell that they did not, and a few of them would seek me out and ask me to go to bat for them in his office. In my conferences with the president, I took the knowledge that I had gained into his personality and modus operandi, and I applied that knowledge that I had acquired to my dealings with him, and ordinarily obtained a result that was for his good, for the good of the student body and the college. That helps us understand the difference between what we conventionally call knowledge and what is better known as wisdom. Wisdom is the skill of applying factual or theoretical knowledge usefully and fruitfully to the betterment of everyday life. So-called book knowledge and factual knowledge without wisdom is like a car chassis without an engine. Unless we gain wisdom to understand how life works, to order our lives according to the moral constitution and the spiritual realities of the world we live in, learn how best to relate to other people, both our enemies and our friends, those above us and those below us, we're going to get in some trouble. And most of all, we need to get in right alignment with our sovereign God and our Creator, who provides for us and sustains all things about us. The fear of the Lord, meaning reverential submission to God. Unless we get in that posture and get aligned with the one who loves us and gave his son to save us from our sins. You know, whatever else we may know, all these knowledge packages are pretty much irrelevant in the long run. You see, it's possible to be a smart fool, and the world is full of them. The world is full of pedigreed fools. They go around with a sack full of facts, but they do not have wisdom at the core, and the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord or reverential submission to God. The Proverbs say, acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget or turn away from the words of her mouth, that is wisdom. Do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, wisdom that is, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is, acquire wisdom, and with all of your acquiring, get understanding. Prize her, she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. Wisdom will place on your head a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty. The problem for us is that, like monetary currency, wisdom has its counterfeits. James knows the threat of imposters and self-deception where wisdom is concerned. James' world, no less than ours, was full of religious teachers and conceited people who passed themselves off as purveyors of wisdom, but whose wisdom was devilish and destructive. They were merely shrewd in a worldly sense, but not wise in a godly sense. James' concern is similar to a warning that we might give to someone not familiar with a highly venomous coral snake. There's another snake that to the unwary looks for the world like the coral snake, but it's non-venomous. How do you know the difference? You look closely at the bands. As the saying goes, red on yellow will kill a fellow. Worldly wisdom is toxic, poison. There is a cleverness that passes for wisdom, but at the end of the day, it's a loss and it's a waste. Sometimes in the crush and crunch of life, we listen to the wrong people, and we pay a heavy price for confusing folly with wisdom. Then at other times, we adopt the wrong models, and we put ourselves on a track that can only lead to frustration and unpleasantness at best and disaster at the worst. At other times, we imagine we're being wise when we're only being clever in a worldly way. We see ourselves as enlightened when, in fact, we're very much in the dark. Folks, all of us want life to work. We want to enjoy life. We want to see good days. There's nothing wrong with that. We seek to enhance and enrich our existence here. Not just here, but also here. Yet it is so clear that some people don't get it together. They seem to lurch from one disaster to another. Everything they touch seems to go south. Not uncommonly, behind these sad scenarios is a life sorely lacking in wisdom, which is what James is talking about. These folks seem to lack it in themselves and can't seem to recognize the voice of wisdom when they hear it in others. They're always listening to the wrong voices. There is a sagacity that is natural, demonic, and deadly. There is a sagacity that is divine. It's important to the health and the well-being of the body of Christ and the cause of Christ that we recognize, not confuse, the marks of both. One kind is a killer, the other is a blessing and a gift of God. There's the risk that in aspiring to be wise, we will emulate the wrong models and gravitate to the wrong counselors and human resources. So the question is, how can we distinguish godly from godless wisdom? James, in these three verses, beginning in chapter 3, verse 13 to the end of the chapter, He describes the attributes of true and false wisdom. We just read it. Does so in some detail. Thus we should not be misled about which taillights we should be following. Right off, James lets us know in general terms before he gets down to specific principles or distinctives. The residency of wisdom or understanding is not known by its academic credentials. It's not known by fine-sounding words or learned droppings. Rather, the markers or the bands, if you please, are its moral behaviors and its spiritual bearing. James says, if you claim to have it, and of course a lot of Jewish teachers did, then prove it. Here's how. Prove it, he says, by noble behavior and that attitude of meekness toward God that always goes like a herald before true wisdom. The beginning of wisdom, I remind you again, as Proverbs 1:7 says, is the fear of God. The fear of God is not a dread of God, a cravenness before God. It's just reverential submission to God. Now, that word meekness can throw us. Meekness, to some, suggests weakness, but not at all. Rightly understood, meekness is one part, a spirit of humility before God that recognizes the relative poverty of human understanding. And meekness is, second part, submission to God in whatever God sees fit to do, all in the understanding that God owes me nothing and I owe him everything. In meekness is the absence of pretentiousness and willfulness, Plummer says. So let any claimants to wisdom start the screening process right here. For ultimately, we have to recognize that since God is the ultimate reality with whom we have to do, and the one to whom we are all eventually accountable, no one can be wise or offer to us any true wisdom whose learning does not lead them into a right relationship with the sovereign God who created and sustains all things. That is the reason true wisdom always has this moral flavor. Now, James proceeds to teach us how to recognize fools who posture as wise men. He gives us the attributes of godless wisdom. Like a venomous snake, here are the moral markings of false wisdom. Here are some signs you can take to the bank. Whoever, wherever, whenever, is touting himself or herself as a fountain of wisdom, who is a person in the grip of any of these spirits, you can discount them and distance yourself from him. So what are the markings or the bands of a counterfeit? Well, you'll not find wisdom in the soil of jealousy or envy. You'll not find wisdom rooted in the soil of bitterness with the connotation of harshness toward the objects of bitterness. You'll not find wisdom rooted in the soil of selfish ambition, the self-seeking pursuit of political office, for example, by underhanded means or any other kind of office, or any other kind of power and influence. So-called wisdom rooted in such soil, jealousy or envy, bitterness, and rooted in carnal ambition, that does not come from God above. On the contrary, its origins are distinctly déclassé, to use a French word. That is, they're earthly as opposed to heavenly. It's soulish or natural as opposed to supernatural. It's demonic as opposed to divine. So where you find anybody posing as a broker of wisdom who is driven by jealousy and envy, bitterness, carnal ambition, one or all of the above, that's not a fountain where you're going to find wisdom. You may find shrewdness. You may find somebody who's cleverly treacherous. You might find somebody who's skillful in a certain way. But that's not a person who is going to bring you closer to God and get you in alignment with him and his will and his way, and bring you into the blessings that God would want to give us. So next, James tells us about the attributes of godly wisdom. He talks about its spirit and its style. So let's talk about its spirit. The wisdom that is from above or from God is first pure. That is, it's free of moral and spiritual defilement. Not in the absolute sense, which is impossible for us in this fallen flesh, though we're in the process of being renewed, but it's pure in the sense of manifesting moral and spiritual integrity and wholeness. That's the soil that godly wisdom grows in. It grows in a moral and spiritual environment characterized by integrity or genuineness. The attributes of godly wisdom are such that its counsels and conduct aim at peaceableness, as opposed to causing and fomenting strife, confusion, and disorder. There are people who actually enjoy strife and confusion and disorder. I remember talking to a fellow one time. It's been 20 or 21 years ago. He was always inserting himself into controversies. And I asked him one time, we'll call his name John Doe. John, what's the deal here? I mean, every time one of these things pops up and I start to deal with it, you're right in the middle of it. I said, you just seem to enjoy a crisis. Oh, he says, I do. He said, I just feel like I'm at my best in crisis. Oh, my. At his best? Well, he was at his worst, and all he could do is make things worse, because this guy's life was so flatlined. He was like an ambulance chaser. He was like a person who saw a fire and just went to it and just liked to watch a building burn. And if it started to burn out, he liked to stick his toe in it and stir the embers and keep them going. Crazy. There are people like that. Well, wherever you find godly wisdom, you find people who prefer peace and who try to promote peace. I don't mean a godless peace. There is a godless peace where you compromise with evil just so you don't have to stand up and risk getting hurt or suffering some kind of personal injury. You'll let others be injured. You'll duck out. You'll hide, whatever. But you don't want to show up for the Lord's battles. That's not what James is talking about. But men and women of God and men and women of wisdom always want peace, and they will do everything they can and work in every way they can to promote a godly peace. True wisdom may be compelled, as I say, to take up arms and do battle for the sake of sacred principle and the truth, but its desire is everything that makes for shalom, makes for the peace and the welfare of the individual and the community. True wisdom goes the extra mile to win peace and then to preserve it, and it's unwilling to sacrifice it, except when the only peace left would be a godless peace. The spirit of wisdom looks, if at all possible, for a win-win situation, and the spirit of godly wisdom will take a loss to preserve the peace, so long as something more important than keeping people happy is not at stake. So that's one of the attributes of godly wisdom. Wisdom is gentle, forbearing, considerate. All those words are in the circumference of the semantic field of the Greek word here. It exhibits that spirit. It knows the difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. It's common sense humane. It understands the difference between weakness and wickedness, and it knows how to strike a balance between treating people the way they deserve and cutting them some slack, because the wise man or wise woman recognizes his own frailties and vulnerabilities all too well. I think Matthew Arnold called it sweet reasonableness. True wisdom shows itself in yielding to persuasion. That's another attribute of the spirit of godly wisdom. It's opposite of disobedience and balky to the word. True wisdom manifests itself in a spirit of godly compliance to the will and words of God. True wisdom is also full of mercy and good fruits, as opposed to heavy-hearted severity and corrupt fruits. Good fruits refers to healthful social benefits to those around them. True wisdom is also unwavering, James says. The Greek word means it's not divided in mind. That is, it's unwavering or single-minded in loyalty or allegiance to the will and the way of the Lord. A wise man's not always halting out there between two opinions, trying to make up his mind which way he wants to go, which path he intends to follow. He has chosen the will and the ways of Christ, and his choice is final, and he's committed to the point of death. He is unhypocritical. He is neither double-minded nor two-faced. He says what he is, and is what he says. Then James talks about the style of true wisdom. Finally, he leaves the moral attributes of a wise man to talk about his work habits. Wisdom aims at producing a crop. That crop is the fruit of righteousness. That's what he always has in view. The wise man or the wise woman, if truly wise, he is a peacemaker by nature, not a peace wrecker. A peacemaker will go about his business in a manner that enhances and promotes a godly peace. He will not by recklessness or out of envy or pride or bitterness or a party spirit stir up unnecessary strife and confusion and disorder. He strives as much as possible to promote concord, not discord. to promote harmony, not hostility. So let me summarize what James says here. Anyone who purports to be a spiritual guide or counselor or teacher or someone to whom people turn for spiritual counsel, well, one must be aware of any guidance that has its root in toxic soil. Any advice or guidance tainted or festering with an envious or jealous spirit is a counsel of a fool. Stay away from that. For example, a woman in a workplace takes up her marital troubles with some divorcees who are seething with bitterness toward their former husband and men in general. Hey, any advice those people give is almost sure to be lethal to any godly solution to her marital problems. Or someone is having trouble with management and takes his or her grievances to some angry spirit who believes that all managers are the curse of the earth and need their comeuppance. The advice they get is not likely to be helpful or wise. Any advice or guidance tainted with a party spirit aiming at selfish ends is the counsel of a fool. One reason the two major political parties have trouble doing what is right for the country is simple. Both are too absorbed in doing what is desired by those who support them. They cannot be trusted much of the time to take action that does not first further the interest of themselves or their party. Fools think only about what is good for themselves or good for their group or party. You do not want to get involved with that. So, we need wisdom. We need wisdom in this life. But we need godly wisdom, not worldly wisdom, not sophisticated cleverness. And James tells us here where to find it. If you go seeking wisdom in the wrong places, places where bitter jealousy and selfish ambition reign, then don't call that wisdom. Don't be arrogant and lie against the truth in professing to be a purveyor of wisdom. Who among you is wise and understanding? Well, it's a person who can show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness or meekness of wisdom. Godly people, people who are really wise, they are peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering and without hypocrisy. And above all, they go around sowing seed whose fruit is righteousness. And when they sow that seed, they do it in peace. So watch who you listen to. And let's examine ourselves and see if we are really wise as measured by those standards. Well, thank you, dear friends, for listening to us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word, remember, is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us in this endeavor or want other information about the program or Jim Andrews, please visit our website at www.thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, Box 230098, Portland, Oregon, 97282-0098. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach and for His provision for its expansion.
Be sure the word gets in there.